Thank you very much, John. We have a few minutes if anyone has questions for John or Mark or PK. I was thinking that a lot of what they, not just these three, but the previous session, spoke to some of the issues identified in those strategic initiatives last night. So if anybody from those groups wants to ask a question, please come up to the microphone. And just identify yourself before you ask the question, please.
Hi, I'm David Bell, formerly of York University, Chair of Learning for a Sustainable Future. I thought these were terrific presentations. I just wanted to comment on Mark's statement that education won't work. I think he qualified it by saying traditional education won't work, but really, almost everything we've been talking about here relies on a transformed type of education. We don't want to ignore the education system. I mean, a lot of people in this room are in the business of education. I think the challenge for all of us is how do we transform education so that it helps achieve these outcomes? How do we get the focus on action? How do we prepare people, starting with kids at a young age, but throughout the entire education system, including the informal and non-formal education system, the lifelong learning, awareness of our population, so that it actually contributes to a sustainable future. That's certainly what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow, but I'd hate to have us leave the room thinking that we can do all sorts of other things, but we should forget about education. We have to transform it.
Mark?
I wasn't sure that was a question, I think that the traditional approaches to education, the traditional belief in education, the traditional belief that social change will come from changing the education system should be questioned very seriously, both because of the length of time it takes to change the education system, because of the relative impact of some of these health-related issues through educational initiatives. And I know that that's a provocative statement to make to educators, but I've been working in this field for 35 years, and I know that what people know is not a predictor of what they will do. And that as we focus on believing that people have to be able to take the pop quiz on a particular subject and score high in order to do the right things that will benefit their health and well-being, I would challenge that seriously. People are not required to have deep knowledge of a subject in order for them to take action on it. And when we look at what people do in their interest from a health point of view, they very rarely know the scientific and factual basis for what they are doing. And yet we continue to believe that we have to give them all kinds of fact-based information, and that will follow along to behavior. The health belief model does not explain how people actually go about formulating intent, taking action, and continuing to take it. And I'm happy to have that debate anytime with anybody. I know that that is something that many educators don't believe. But I'm very interested in having that discussion, and out of that discussion usually comes some good things, because people do have to know something, but what they have to know is often very different from what traditional educators think they need to know.
John?
Just a quick point on this. I totally agree with what Mark's saying, but I think I agree with the speaker as well. The first thing is I agree that, through education, you're not going to get behavioral change, healthy behavior out of it. That's long since given. We've got to change the environment in which people are immersed to help them once they have the knowledge to make those changes. So that's a separate issue. But the general value of education is a determinant of health. It's still, we don't want to take away from that at all. In fact, many people now looking at this is how would we better spend any marginal increases in public expenditure? We would get 8 times as much returns in terms of health outcomes by spending it on improved education generally than in pumping more into the healthcare system.
I agree with that, by the way, completely. Education as a determinant of health is a huge factor and is very important to support.
But I think the question was about if traditional education isn't working, what's the model? What do you see as a more effective form of education then?
When I was a kid, a teacher by trade who was working at a camp I was at in the summer took my autograph book, and he wrote in it, "Never let school interfere with your education." And that was in the 50s. I would say that today there are other channels, other vehicles through which people are educated, learn about things, other than the traditional education system, whatever modern approach it takes. If you think back to your health education in school, think about how carefully you attended to what you were told in health class about health. I know I didn't pay attention. It was one of the most boring and interesting things imaginable taught by the gym teacher. So I think that we have to be very, very hard-nosed about what we're focused on and what we want people to understand, and what the channels and vehicles are for engaging them. And they tend not to be the workplace. They tend not to be the school in a health context. Again, I'm not challenging the value of education in determinant terms, but when we're thinking about behavior change, we're thinking about system change. Just as an example, we worked on changing federal policy on cancer control in Canada. Before we began, the people working on this went to the members of Parliament of Canada and started to talk to them about cancer and the prevalence of cancer in Canada. And the MPs told them, "Wow, I had no idea cancer was such a problem." Can you believe that? They don't live in this world where 1 in 3 and soon 1 in 2 people will have cancer in their lifetime. Everybody's touched by cancer, but suddenly MPs never were. And then they said, "You know, you've really got to educate us about cancer. Give us the facts. Help us understand." No, that's not what changed public policy. Playing politics changed public policy. We did not make one single effort to educate MPs about the nature, breadth, and depth of cancer in this country. We did try to get them focused on the political consequences of not acting, and that got them to move very far, very fast. And we changed public policy in 14 months. But, you know, it's not a traditional approach. It's not informing them about a subject which they told us would do it. There are just so many examples where information has not proven to be an effective motivator in getting people to do what's good for them.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Daniel Becker from Rio. I've been working with the poorest of the poor in Brazil for a long time. I totally agree with you that information, education as a source of information, will not change people's behavior, people's minds, people's future. It won't change the settings that we want to change. On the other hand, there are new ways of educating people using more participatory approaches. Participation is a world that is taking over more and more the fields of education, of health, of social intervention in general. You said very interestingly for me that there is no transaction without a fulfilled need or a fulfilled desire. I think there's no greater need in humanity than being someone, that being a citizen, that being a subject, not being a victim of a disease or a social condition. When you work with the poor and you help them by very simple ways and simple methodologies that are already structured, are out there, they are just not very well known, to become citizens, to become people, to become persons, subjects that can change their reality, even if it's a very small portion of their reality, you can start to change them, to change their vision, their perspectives. So I wanted to turn this to a question. I wanted to ask John if in British Columbia governmental programs on community development from a health perspective, if you have, if you are using a participatory approach involving the people and the programs.
The government isn't. The government has just removed funding for BC Healthy Communities. But like I said before, I don't think we can any longer depend on governments to do this by themselves. So there are community efforts going on, which we're trying to build on through a number of non-government organizations. So we are very aware of the process, a participatory process, and we are trying to act on that.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question before we break for lunch. Two more questions.
Narendra Arora from Inclin. My question is addressed to John. You very eloquently outlined the need for bringing businesses on the table and also the difficulties which are likely to occur. But if one tries that, one, we would like to have initial successes to bring them over. So what is your suggestion, or anybody on the panel, that what kind of businesses should be approached who become models of getting onto the table mm-hmm. and working for this cause?
I think it depends a little bit on what vision you're working towards. But in our case, where we're looking to reduce child and family poverty and the various dimensions of poverty, the players that are coming forward earliest are banks, for one, particularly cooperatively run banks, insurance companies, some private entrepreneurs. It's variable, and that's why I mentioned the concept of a champion. So one area that we've been working in is in injury prevention, and we have businesses coming to the table there. And the way it worked well was to have one leading business individual invite the others to come and say to them, look, I'm putting my company's money into this to this amount. What can you bring to the table? So by getting those champions and leaders initially in and then attracting others is the way to go. So it's going to depend a little bit on what your focus is.
Okay, one last question and then we'll take a break for lunch.
Thank you. I'm Jim Ball from the Public Health Agency of Canada, and I have a practical question. Mark, I think what you said in terms of changing the conversation is an extremely important point. And within that, you talked about change must be seen to be done in the public context. And I wonder if you could offer us some ideas about how we might go about doing that, given that the literacy levels of the media on this issue are very low, given that voluntary organizations are in a very difficult financial position and have trouble mounting any kind of campaign, and the difficulties politically for governments to undertake that kind of work to promote what is going on as part of the solution, and then try and get those, as people were saying, those smaller solutions to grow into a larger movement and multiple solutions.
I'd say that the world has changed. I mean, you just heard that the BC government has cut funding for the healthy living. I mean, is that crazy? But governments are no longer in Canada the driving force in social change that they once were. And people can no longer look to governments. There are really three different things to think about in generating the energy and the resources to mount programs. First of all, is to create. It's a framing problem. Making sure, and this relates to what we just heard about how you have to frame issues that relate to markets. So how we frame the issue has a huge effect. And we have to think differently about how we frame things, because the old ways just end up having us talking to ourselves. The second thing is we have to look not where the resources aren't, but where the resources are. And the first and most important resource is strategic intelligence. The less money you have, the smarter you have to be. People believe that only with a lot of money can you do things, but in fact, only with the right kind of intelligence can you do things. The second thing is there are resources out there. One of the things we're trying to do is to create this convergence between health and economic forces. And again, we just heard about two significant forces at work in the champion area, one being business. About 40% of my business is devoted to working with major corporations to help them become better corporate citizens. Moving beyond check-writing philanthropy into actually social activism, though they would never call it that. They are putting significant monies and human resources into these issues. We've got to find a way how to connect with them and align them against this agenda. The other part is the private sector philanthropist, the individual philanthropist. People don't understand in Canada that only 11% of philanthropic dollars come from corporations. The public believes that about 66% of it comes from corporations. In fact, 66% or more of it comes from private philanthropists who want to do good with their money. helping them understand how to think differently and act differently and to align with some of these initiatives is going to be very, very important. My experience is there's tons of money. People are far too focused on money, and they're not enough focused on creating perceived value. Money flows to perceived value. If we want to make sure we get the resources, we better be able to frame our goals, objectives, and plans in a way that is perceived to have value and meaning to the people who have the resources. It's that simple, and it's that challenging.
Well, what an interesting morning. Would you thank PK and Mark and John once again? We're almost bang on time, so we'll come back just a bit after one, okay, for lunch.